Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Wow. Well, I am very privileged today to be joined again by Stephen J. Manning, and we've got a really big topic to discuss: love, technology, and everything in between the AI revolution. And we're going to explore the intersection of love, technology, and this ongoing AI revolution with actually a special focus on the potential robot revolution predicted by MIT. We're going to also talk a little bit about online dating, which is a minefield, and how we think that is actually affecting the world and potentially affecting the gene pool. Potentially, we might get into that. You never know with Dr. Manning over there. Anything is possible. So, welcome, Stephen. It's always a massive pleasure to have a conversation with you, to be honest.
Dr. Schooler, the pleasure is always mine.
So it is rather worrying. I must admit, not you, but I am worried about technology, and I'm worried about love and technology and those particular things, especially with this AI revolution, which according to MIT is going to be backed up very soon with the robot revolution, which is it's happening, but a lot slower than one might expect, with all of the hype that we've seen in the last 10 years, 15 years, even 20 years about robots. I thought that by now, you know, we might have a robot Robbie walking around our homes. If you haven't seen that film, I think it's The Hidden Planet, 1956, with Robot Robbie, who translates 120 languages, and he makes things in his stomach. He actually creates all sorts of things with this 3D printer, I think, actually, which is quite interesting considering it's 1956. Yeah,
you know, see, there's nothing new. Nothing new. It's just
not really
bigger, better, stronger, more exciting, more frightening, more challenging, more, oh my God, the world's going to come to an end. Oh no, I can really do that and that and that also. No, I don't have a PhD in anything from MIT, but I can also do that. Oh yeah, well, Robbie was right on point. A little early for his time, but he was on point.
He was very early. And then there was that film in the 1980s. And I always kick myself of what that film was actually called. But it had this, just trying to recall, it had these three robots, and Johnny Five reprogrammed the other two. Somehow he went rogue, and then he started smoking cigarettes, and he actually reprogrammed the other two robots because I think he wanted to escape because he'd fallen in love with a toaster or something. I don't know. It's a long time ago now.
And just think, all of that knowledge, cumulative knowledge, all that experimentation gave birth to a vacuum cleaner that you don't have to plug in.
Well, that's isn't the point. That cool? But that is, you jest, but actually that's a very good point. Because it's like, actually, just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should. And this is something that you've talked about with me before on multiple occasions, actually. And it's very worrying, all of this stuff, to be honest. Because just because you can do something doesn't mean you can, right? And this is same like with dating apps, yeah. And social media, like you can have all sorts of problems, can't you? You can have all sorts of issues, but also you can be lucky. You can filter out your search, and you can let the platforms actually say to you, oh, well, okay, you don't want a smoker, you don't want a drinker, you want someone who's into exercise, and you want all of these things. You want this person to be just like that, but actually you could create a robot like that, right? Surely.
Two comments. One, just have to share with you that I saw Adam Carolla. I don't know if you know who he is. Really, no. Smart guy, funny, great great writer. He has a podcast, just shows, and he's a good raconteur, and it's very challenging. And he said, you know, all this revolution stuff, I will try to paraphrase. I am going to wrap myself in aluminum foil, get a broomstick, hop on my self-propelled vacuum, go out among the millions, and I'm going to become the Grand Wizard, because that's all I need. So I just thought I'd share that with you. But needless to say, I forgot what you asked.
Don't worry.
No, ask it again, because
I mean, I was just sort of talking about, we were talking about dating apps, social media, and how, you know, how potentially the benefits and the drawbacks really of that in particular, because there are all these data points, aren't there? You know, we exchange data points everywhere, right? So, you know, I like jujitsu. I like all these different sports. And then I go and connect Instagram to this platform. And then that platform shows my recent Instagram footage to these people. And I can basically, if I'm good at it, I can paste a picture of what the hell I want. I can craft a persona, and I can manipulate,
here's the fundamental problem, Nathaniel.
You know, yeah.
I just took my broomstick, which is also mm-hmm. wrapped in tinfoil, and I yeah. honed in on you in a conversation. Mm-hmm. The problem with how you present yourself, what you see, what you do. You know that old Steiner cartoon, a famous Steiner cartoon, which shows a dog sitting in a chair facing a monitor, a keyboard. Mm-hmm. And there's another dog over his shoulder looking over his shoulder. And the caption reads, "On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog."
No. Very true.
So, to begin with, dating apps, I mean, I'm somewhat cynical about social media. Well, I started out being really cynical about political correctness. I said political correctness has done more harm to the development of mind and therefore the world than any despot could have done. I then came across something called social media. Remember, I was in a room when Twitter was created, as I told you. I didn't understand it. 5-6 hours into it, they declare me a barely functioning idiot. And then we all want the too much deli food. I kind of get it, but not really. Of course, Facebook, the big kahuna in the room. I might have been among the first 10 people who ever bought advertising on Facebook. Bought stuff they said they didn't have.
Right.
Okay, anyway.
A lot of advertising.
So I said, when all those kids embarrassed me on Twitter, I said, you know, social media is a cancer of the intellect. Right. I continue to say that to an audience that's less and less receptive. But going back to the Steiner cartoon, in the dark ages, way back in history, that was a year or two ago, literally before AI became what it is today, the complaint I heard from everyone who tried dating apps was, in my mind, hey, on the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. Everybody's good looking. Everybody is wealthy. Everybody has all these incredible attributes. And when you meet them, the joke among the contemporaries to certainly my younger daughter, I have two very successful grown women, was, so the guy showed up, okay, you know, he's not 6'2", he doesn't have a full head of hair, he really can't dunk a basketball, no, he really doesn't have an advanced degree from the London School of Economics, but he's a nice guy, nice enough guy, and the car, the turbocharged, unique Porsche that he drives, is in the shop. Okay, so the question is, how come 39 out of the first 40 you date, the Porsche is in the shop? And of course, am I being cynical? I said, well, unfortunately, you have to work your way to 35 slugs before you find one that's not as much of a slug. Now we have this incredible opportunity to manufacture persona, manufacture language, manufacture the habits out of basically thin air. Do you happen to have a little bitty computer? Do you happen to have one of these dudes? No problem. You can't create it. So what happens then? You create relationships that are absolutely artificial. Let me say this. The relationship is real. The fundamentals are artificial. So when do you discover that the person you're dating could be a child molester living in a milk crate in Solmar, California?
Yeah, well, I'm not talking about having the. But that's, you know, that's the point, isn't it? That's the point.
When do you discover that that man, you know, I thought driving one of my three Lamborghinis was just too pretentious, huh? Which is why I drive a 17-year-old Yugo. Now, obviously,
you go, but the car doesn't.
Thank you. And by the way,
that's one of Marin's.
Will you tell Marin that the Yugo was phenomenal until you died? In other words, give it a couple of months, you died of monoxide poisoning in your own car. But hey,
I don't want.
If I was hungry and I didn't have a choice, I would drive a Yugo.
Well, I would probably, yes.
But anyway, I'm playing with this a little bit because so much of this technology, when we personalize it, has an opportunity to really be destructive and really deleterious to all those great things.
But I'm going to stop you.
That make us people.
Still, I've got to stop you. If someone is devious and someone is manipulative and someone is like that, they're going to do it anyway. They don't necessarily have to do that online. They can still prey upon a weak person face to face, right? So I don't think it really affects. Yes, they can just do it more en masse. They can be more selective. They can be more manipulative and everything else. And they can catfish and they can emotionally abuse people, and they can financially abuse them, because that's the thing. People kind of like that. Some people, which is kind of weird. Both parties like that, which I find quite strange. But actually it just amplifies the behavior, right? But what I do like about social media and I like about dating apps is actually you can train them to find you the right people, right? So but it still doesn't take out the work. You still have to do the work, right? But actually I think that you potentially might miss that person who could be really, really good for you, because actually you've decided, well, I only date on applications, right? I don't meet people in the real world because I'm far too important for that. And actually I'm too scared, because this is what generally happens. I mean, you know, people are frightened of approaching partners of the other people of the other sex, right? Like they are scared of that now. And it's so unusual that actually people that do it are, you know, doing better in the dating pool, right? But I'd like to
share a brief event with you, because I will tell you that nothing's really new, is just massively different, just like AI. I mean, we've talked about this. I was in the AI world in 1982. Classic, quintessential, except it's bigger, better, stronger, faster, but it's the same. Some years ago, before we all had this incredible ability to find partners and mates, a young woman that worked for us, she had all those attributes that you said, well, she is smart. She is wonderfully verbal. She is reasonably well-educated. She reads. And the coup de grace, she's also very good-looking. And she came to me one day and she was really bummed. She had gone through a terrible divorce. And a year later, she was ready. Enough dating, she was really ready to find the right partner. So, oh my God, how difficult is that? It's almost impossible. Is it? Not really. So as I'm concerned, it's a marketing problem. It's just like everything else. My kids will tell you when it comes down to it, everything for me becomes a math problem, marketing problem.
Right.
So we sat down for hours. Yellow pad, like debits and credit, T-account. What is it that you really want? There's 28 things. What is it you really don't want? There's 20 of these. Okay, now let's qualify those. Let's come up with the real do's and the real don'ts. Okay, you want this, but you don't want that. Would you trade those? Now, this is ours, Nathaniel. I mean, I invested many, many hours in this.
Of course.
And we finally created a profile, which was, that's the man. And then I said, okay, now, I promise you that if you want a guy who likes fine art and yachting, you may not want to go to the bowling alley on Sunday. It's a simple marketing problem. Who's your audience? Where is? What do people like that do? You want all that, and you want the guy to be really nice to his mother, too, a visit once a week. It really, I promise you, got really granular. And here's the upshot. What do people like that do? Where do they go? What they hang out? What their life's just like? We create a profile, and we decide, well, that's what you want, and that's what they do. The amazing part, of course, 3 months later, she introduces me to that guy. And I'm telling you exactly, hey, if we had a menu, and there he was. 6 months into it, she marries this man. Isn't that amazing?
Crazy.
A year later, she comes, and now here's somewhat tying into the topic. A year into this incredible marriage, I went to this incredible wedding. I really liked that guy. I liked his mother. And my person was so happy. A year later, she walks into my office one day and said, I need some help, okay? I need a reference to what? A divorce lawyer. The perfect guy. What's wrong with him? Nothing. He's perfect. And I'm going to die of absolute boredom. He is perfect, but he's boring me to death. He's everything I ever wanted, and I think I'm going to commit suicide. I need to get a divorce.
Yeah.
3 months later, she was divorced. So it ties into this to the extent that you got to remember there's an individuality thing there. You got to do some homework. You got to put your brain, your gut, your heart into the thing. I'm not going to let this dude on my keyboard tell me that is the person for me.
But also, it's a learning process, right? And actually, most people don't really know what they want. And they really don't. Huh. Not really. They think they do, like you've said, but they don't really know at the end of the day. And that's where this AI revolution, I think, is actually quite helpful, because I use ChatGPT and Gemini and all these tools. I use them for all sorts of things. And I actually use Gemini sometimes as a coach. I have conversations with Gemini and I say, well, I'm thinking about this and I'm trying to do that and I'm not sure about this. What do you think? And Gemini, I said, you are a coach and you need to coach me. So I prompt Gemini and I explain to Gemini what I want Gemini to do. And then it helps me to come up with my own conclusion, much like a coach would, right? And actually, I believe that we are progressing in that direction. MIT seems to think that once the user interface catches up, which means a robot, right, or whatever it is, glasses, whatever it is, it's gonna be something different, because I'm sick of looking at my phone. You know, most people I know, I see so many people just looking at their phones, or there's people that don't at all. Sometimes I don't look at my phone at all for hours and hours. Some people look at it all the time. So This is a very big problem for certain age groups. I've noticed that sort of the younger people don't really have as much of a problem with it as the people who are perhaps 30, maybe 27, 28 and upwards. They, I think, have more of a sort of problem. But I think
I know some people that are classic addicts.
Right, classic. Right. And they are. Yeah,
addicted
they are.
To that. But, I mean, to that and yeah, you know, I think there's more to light than the 4x6.
But Steve, that's another point. A very useful, interesting point that you raised, and actually, that is affecting relationships. Right, that's affecting relationships dramatically because we're continually on our phones, and we and the people who really can't put their phone down and have a problem with their phone, they're the ones that are actually causing unhappiness within a relationship. If two people in that relationship have phones, obviously they do, one of them is good at not looking at the phone and can just say, well, I don't need to look at the phone, I'm gonna put it on airplane mode whilst I'm with you and we're going to enjoy time together, blah blah blah. And the other one says, oh no, I can't do that, right? Then that creates tension in the relationship. Yeah.
Nathaniel, my wife and I have been married for decades. We go out to dinner. We do a lot of things, you know. And last night going out to dinner, I had the same exact experience. I have every time she and I talked for an hour and a half, her phone constantly buzzing because there are 4, 5, 6 people in her life that have to be in touch. And I say choice things like, are you guys solving the Middle Eastern problem? How's world famine coming along? Is there somebody dangling from a skyscraper trying to the windows is asking for your advice? A lot of people call my wife for advice. And that I looked around this restaurant, there was a couple there. I thought they were octogenarian. And they had phones on the table. Every other table, families, kids, whatever, at least 75% of them were doing this. I'm a confused family of four. A man, wife, and 2 kids. They're in their early teens. I recognize the guy. He is a highly respected professional in this big community. For the entire duration of dinner, they never once addressed each other. I know a couple people that will send me Instagram crap, sorry, at 2 in the morning. Excuse me, I'm up at 3, but at 2, I don't need to see that silly thing with a cat. But those are addictions. Now,
they are, yeah.
You know,
but you can.
The problem
can,
is,
yeah.
The problem for me is you absolutely sink your individuality into this downward vortex of technology. Now, technology started out by improving our lives. I mean, the wheel did, and electricity and telephone, internet, AI. But you and I talk, and excuse me, where does technology end and life begins again? You know, because you can be, excuse me, I don't need you. I can build my own mates using technology. Okay. I don't know. I, for one, want to live with someone I can have an argument with, I can have a discussion with. I don't need a tutorial. I would like to know why you think that what do you think? Why you think that? Oh, no, you know, Nathaniel, do you happen to remember when you sustained brain damage if you really believe that? And Nathaniel says, well, let's talk about Livingston and Stanley. Okay, now, you know what? Gemini, co-pilot, it's not going to take me in that conversation from what I just said. You know, it's like, in case you were watching, listening, think that I'm overstating this, I'm not. We have lovely spiritual and loving contentious discussions. Without that, I would fall asleep and Nathaniel will never pick up the phone.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but there's an individual, there's a component there. So much of what this man says to me is relevant more for where it comes from. Where it comes from, rather than the database it's got in his head. It's how he sees that thing, how he sees that event. What does it really mean to him? And you know what? It is tragic when we strive for uniformity. Uniformity breeds contentment. It breeds ordinary people. It breeds obscurity. No, we are more interesting for our contrasts than we are for our commonalities. Now, commonalities, interests, competencies bring us together. But as my girl, Linda, sorry, not being sexist, but she used to tell me, you know, I'm your girl. Can you help me? Just exactly that. All the commonalities, interests, and competencies got them together. What destroyed it is because it was heartless.
Boredom.
It did boredom. did not have your soul in it, Nathaniel. By the way, those boredom. Of you listening to this, Nathaniel is a rather soulful individual when he's not trying to kill people doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Otherwise, he's just a lovely guy. I have to
I'm
say that.
A bit too old. A bit too old for that, Steve. But too old to be killing people.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But
with the list that you have in your brain of things and activities, work, play, life that we may want to preserve rather than surrender to the technology, it's an important list because I believe that is actually the secret to removing ourselves from this burden of addiction. Because if you're able to control your mind, then you're able to actually combat this problem, right? That's kind of how I'm sort of looking at it. And you know, we're at a point in life now where everything is revolutionizing, right? And you know, we do encourage our listeners, however, to share their thoughts and questions. So if you are listening to this, you've got a question, you've got some thoughts that you really want to tell us, then please do reach out. You can reach out directly on whatever platform it is, post a comment in the comments, or you know, chat to us privately via email, which will be at the bottom of this. Yeah, I mean, Steve, what's this wish list of activities that you want to preserve?
I don't want to get ethereal because I'm not. I'm way too black and white for that. But what exactly are you? Who are you? And why do you think that? Why do you want to do that? The great accomplishment in life, I think, is to be a thought leader. Now you can be a thought leader just for yourself, and how to think and what to think. When you start losing your individuality, you lose that. Okay, so how many people, you know? An aside, I have friends who ask me to bring my little boombox when we have dinner at somebody's house or whatever outside, play my music. And okay, so what do you want to listen to? I have 130,000 cuts of music. You want to get high? Okay. I've never gotten drunk in my life. I've never gotten stoned in my life. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't take drugs. But I'll tell you what, I'm not going to lose my soul entirely. I can get really high on music. Because it speaks to me, and I want to know how did that piece of music come about? I can get really high on my mate. I can't think of a bigger high than spending time with this wonderful woman. I get absolutely jazzed talking to you. And we talk, dear folks listening to this, we do talk about the man on the moon. And you know, not because we're bored, it's just exciting, interesting. I don't want to go to Gemini and say, I'm going to talk to Nat Schooler. It looks up Nat Schooler. And we're going to talk about singularity. What should I say?
No.
I want 10 points. I get 10 points in what, 4 seconds?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will commit intellectual suicide the day I do that. Don't give up on your passions. If you're passionate about art, whatever, you're passionate about collecting bottle caps, don't go to AI and say, what I do instead of collecting bottle caps? Oh, there are millions of people looking. Millions of people go to AI to find a passion. You know, one of my precepts of life is life without a passion is not a life worth living. Well, then give me what to be passionate about. Are you kidding? Get passionate about something you saw, read, that got you tweaked. Good, bad, angry, happy. Boko Haram stole another 250 little girls.
Can I tell you what I'm really excited about at the moment? At the moment, they're actually creating an organic brain interface where they've taken brains from 13 different brains, organic, real brains. They've stuck them all together, and they're actually doing experiments on that. That excites me.
Well, I think they can do that. I think my mom will rise from the grave, and she'll take that and put it in the pot. We'll haul up great herbs and spices and juices and stuff and create a brain stew. I think that's a great use for that. Don't you think?
Well, I think it's interesting, to be honest. I think it's very interesting.
Fascinating. It's fascinating. Yeah. One of my friends who's a physician, really quality guy. He's also a police officer. I said this last time. I said to him, what do? You shoot him and fix him up? Anyway. You know what? I'm much better off having the AI robot that Cedars read my MRI than any radiologist. Yeah. Okay, I'm good with that. Now, let me get passionate about the technology that makes that happen. That's kind of cool. I can spend a year studying that. I had a good friend who was the honorary mayor of Greenwich Village. He was insane, brilliant, but insane. And he had a wife who was truly insane. On January 1, here's passion. January 1, every year for 30 years, he'll pick up the New York Times and go like this. Point at on the page. Whatever that topic was, is what we would study for a year. For a year, studied it, in addition to running a big agency.
Wow.
At the end of the year, he would publish a 67-page thing on what he learned. Ed, I don't have to tell you this, but you can't learn everything about nuclear fission in about, a year. And his insane wife would put in art in there. And there was a list of 176 or 70 of us that got Ed's thing. And it was a joy. You know what the joyous part was? Not what he discovered, because you'll read that and say, well, you know what? That one out. We all know that.
Right. Right.
But to read the passion in the project that Ed Burnett put into it was phenomenal. That's joy. Okay, that's joy. Don't give it up. I don't know how to tell you this. Ed, may he rest in peace. Any one of the books you published over those years that your wife illustrated, God help us, I can go to Gemini and say, I need 76 pages, 11-point chalkboard type on this topic. 2 minutes, would you say?
Yeah, probably less.
But you're never going to see Ed actually going to that place at 2 in the morning to smell the thing. True. Don't give up that passion to efficiency. Or expediency, don't give up music. Don't give up painting. Are you a lousy painter? Yeah, paint anyway. It's in the eye of the beholder. Look, I am given to, as you know, some occasionally less than pleasant behavior in the face of this, like drowning your cell phone in a glass of Diet Coke. Because after, if you don't want to listen to me, why don't you go out to dinner with your cell phone? I'm given to saying to otherwise perfectly fine people, if you are not going to look at me when I'm talking to you, I'm not going to talk to you. Well, now why? You can get really passionate about hating what I just said. Or really? I didn't know that. Well, how do you know that? Well, because I'm a repository of lots of useless information. So you whip that out. But those are passions in life. Having a conversation with you is a passion in life. Going out to dinner sitting with my wife to a terrible sushi joint. You know why that's a passion? You know why that's, I don't want to give it up? I convinced those people to make me an ordinary shrimp hand roll. We don't do that. We do all the sophisticated pages, all this great shit. You know what? Sorry. I just want a, one of those. What do you want in it? Are you kidding? You guys are a pop. Okay. And I tell them what I wanted it. And they look at me like, that's it. Yeah, that's it. I look forward to challenging those two chefs. You know, AI is not going to make me that simple, ordinary shrimp sushi roll. That I walk in there.
I don't know. You know, I think we're not far away from that. And actually,
well, for now,
what we're furthest away from, right, which is still good news, is singularity. And I urge you, if you're listening to this, to go and check out our talk on singularity that we did last week or the week before. But actually, we are getting closer and closer to having robots that do useful things. And I think we're at a point where, you know, they can become too integrated into our daily lives. And that's what Steve's talking about here. And if you rely on technology too much and you can't actually write a sentence yourself or think for yourself, that's when you've basically got real problems. But it's getting late here, and I've taken up huge amounts of your time as usual. And
my privilege, I promise.
Thank you. And yeah, I've just got something to briefly say here before we scoot off. Yeah, many companies struggle with creating the right content, and AI writing tools and content creation tools have made that worse. Enough companies do not differentiate between the utilitarian need for all manner of AI and the window dressing they feel they must have. What do we provide our clients? Well, some of that follows content production for forward-thinking brands and ambitious individuals, podcasts, white papers, deep dive industry reports, explainer videos. Do you have an audience? Well, we will provide you with all you need to tell your story, to captivate and entice your audience, to ensure that they understand who you are and what you do and why they should pay attention to you. And of course, buy from you. Remember, a Manningism: nothing happens until you sell something. If you would like more to the point, no frills and usable implications and reality of AI, Stephen J. Manning and I are creating industry specific reports and white papers on much of the breadth and of the massive AI topic. And of course, the big pink elephant in the room, how AI will affect your job and industry moving forwards. So do contact me on LinkedIn, or you can contact me on contact@influentialvisions.com. If you would like us to tailor something specifically for you, we'd love to hear from you. You can obviously contact Steve as well via his website, and I'll leave a link for that as well. And keep an eye out for his new book, which is coming out very soon. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.